Would you introduce yourself, please?
This is Dave Faulkner of the world-famous, or partially famous, Hoodoo Gurus from Australia.
You can have 10. You can have like 72.6% of the world. I need the other part for being famous. So, as I mentioned off camera, it's been a minute. The last time we saw each other was South by Southwest 2007. So my math tells me that's 14.256 something years. What the hell have you guys been?
That's 300 years in pop years.
But has the band been active all that time?
We have, funnily enough. I mean, it doesn't. Some people wouldn't have thought so because we kind of go into fits and starts. But we've been playing all that time. Really, we broke up before that for 6 years, and we reformed in 2004, and we've been just, you know, playing gigs. We did a couple of albums and took our time about that, longer than normal. And this last one has been insanely ridiculous how long we've taken to make another album. But we finally got there. So, yeah, we've been active in our own way, but we're older, we're slower, and also we had things going on. You know, there were factors in the band. I mean, basically our drummer, Mark, wanted to retire, and he didn't make that clear for a while. So we were kind of like, he was saying no to shows, and things were getting kind of more, a bit slower. And he didn't want to make a record either, as it turned out. We weren't aware of that either. So for one reason or another, it took us a while. And you know, the idea of having a new drummer was something we were reluctant to accept because Mark had been with us for so long. So that long period of figuring that all out, and Mark eventually retired, then came back, then retired again, meant that we lost a lot of time. And you know, it was good time, actually. It was important for us, but I guess in terms of making new music, it was a bit of a hindrance. Mark was an intrinsic part of our personality, and we weren't sure that we wanted to have a new personality. Because we knew it would change.
Yeah, and that's hard. That's really hard. I mean, getting someone new to give the same energy.
The same energy, but also, you know, you can't have the same energy. So it's going to be, you know, will we feel like ourselves, or will we kind of be a pale imitation? So we were worried about that. And so we didn't want to force the issue when it became obvious Mark was only going to stay for, you know, a little while longer. We didn't know whether we should just, you know, see it out and then maybe break up. So that was a learning process for us. We had Nick came the first time when Mark left, you know, retired. Nick was there for about 18 months, and we were enjoying it, but we weren't sure yet, you know, whether Nick was the right guy. And then Mark came back, and we said, like, oh, great, we got Mark back, and we were happy again, feeling like things were back to normal. But then, of course, he scratched that itch and decided to retire again. So then we tried out other drummers and realized Nick was the guy, and now we're very, very happy to have Nick. And we realized, you know, we probably needed to go through that extra breakup with Mark to kind of, you know, be ready for someone else, to be honest.
That's a lot of rehearsing for a breakup, I got to tell you.
It is. Well, it's like, you know, you talk about, you know, make-up sex and break-up sex or whatever. You know, we had all of that, you know, in terms of music, you know. And, you know, we had the rebound relationship with Nick, and then, you know, it didn't kind of work out the first time, but then, you know, we were ready for each other the second time. I don't know. You know, it's just funny to talk about it like that. But it is an organic thing, and a bit like, very intimate, like a marriage or something, really. So, you know, we have to kind of really be on the same page and all these things, just like any relationship.
The good news is I'll do it in the announcer voice because it's the only way I can do it. Chariot of the Gods. You cannot say that album title like, hey, it's Charity of the Gods. You have to go, Chariot of the Gods. Right. You have to. I mean, this is an album and a major motion picture.
Well, it was a 70s documentary, supposedly. Quite a documentary, a bit of a fan fiction.
Right. So I'm just going to go right here because I have to. I mean, obviously, it was recorded during COVID.
It was, in fact, yes. We started the first single before COVID. Answered Prayers came out in December of 2019, so that was COVID free. But the rest of the album, the rest of the album has been very COVID affected.
So, I mean, I know during the first round, you know, here and everywhere, everything just went and shut down. I also know that as recently, because I have a lot of friends over, you know, over there, as recently as a few months ago, you know, there were still shutdowns.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what has affected the tour I'm on right now. So we've had many months of lockdowns, and different states had worse, like Victoria had, Melbourne in particular.
Yes, Melbourne had it really bad, yes.
They had it early on, but then Sydney had its own sort of second bout that was kind of heavy as well. So, yeah, our lives have been played, you know, merry havoc with, or whatever the term you'd use.
So how do you make a... Yeah, how do you
I
make,
know.
Because well, you are not a make it at home kind of band.
We are
you
not. We had to be in the room together. We can't even like learn our parts separately. We've got to basically all be together and devise how the song sounds together. Otherwise, it just doesn't work for us. You know, it's not a case of, you know, I trust you to do your bit and I'll figure out my bit and then we'll just chuck them together and see what happens. It's not like that. We kind of you know, organically create together how it all fits together. So we were stuck at one point in 2020 where we wanted to make a single, and we had to not see each other for several months. We literally weren't in the room together, and we were only seeing each other, you know, meeting via Zoom occasionally to see if we were okay, you know, mental health check. But, you know, that just basically put a stop to everything, and that's happened off and on throughout the recording process, as you can expect. But the album was basically finished pretty much in the middle of last year. We had intended to bring it out in October, so it was getting ready to go into production, but there were some hiccups with that, with getting vinyl pressed in time, and also our touring had to suddenly get suspended because of lockdowns. And so it ended up being, well, let's not release it in October when we can't even play a show to promote it. Let's wait until next year.
Till March, yeah.
And also it meant that we could get the vinyl out at the same time, which was good because vinyl factories are overwhelmed with, you know, there's so few of them and everyone wants their vinyl right now, and it means you've got to wait 6 months or 12 months sometimes.
For 50 episodes, my company produced the Rhino podcast.
Right.
And there was a box set on the Ramones, and you know where I'm going here. If you don't know where I'm going, I'll be amazed.
Ed Stasian, I guess.
And my guest was one Ed Stasian. And I'm on Facebook with him, and it was really funny because he, of course, does a post, and he says, new single by, you have a little bit of a history with this man.
Yeah. We Ed mixed our album Kinky.
Right.
Which is 1,000 Miles Away, Miss Free Love 69 are two well-known songs off that for some people. Some people would know. We were producing ourselves at that time completely. We'd gone through a whole period of the previous album as well, Magna Cum Laude, which had that song Come Anytime you mentioned to me off camera. So we produced it ourselves, but we knew we weren't capable of mixing it. So we got decent mixers to come and do it, and Dave Thoner did the Magnum Cum Laude album, and Ed Stasian did Kinky, and then we worked with Ed for the next album as producer because we enjoyed working with him so much, and of course we are massive fans of his work with, you know, the Ramones and Talking Heads and you name it, you know, it's a Living Colour. So we worked with Ed on the next album, Crank, and also because the other guys, I kind of am more the producer in the band anyway. I'm the Paul. So out of those Beatles. So they got sick of me calling all the shots. So it was kind of a little bit of a being more democratic in the sense by getting an outside producer to kind of be the main guy. So that was, you know, and Ed was fantastic. And we thought of Ed again, you know, years later when we had the Purity of Essence album. And we tried mixing in Australia with someone else and we weren't happy with it. And just out of the blue, we thought, let's try Ed. And Ed was living at the time in Durango, Colorado. And Ed straight away, he sent some mixes back and they were right on the money. And it was just fantastic. And we just thought, this guy gets it. You know, he knows how we feel about the...
He knows how to mix a rock and roll record.
Yeah. So I actually flew over and spent a week or so with Ed and we mixed, remixed the album basically together. And... it was fantastic, and of course, he was the first person we thought of this time as well, you know.
But obviously, you didn't fly to Poway or
no,
whatever.
We couldn't do it this time. So what was happening was we were actually Zooming every day, Zed and, wow. Ed and myself. And I'd get up at 8 a.m. Was when I'd go online with Ed, which about, I think it's 3 p.m. Los Angeles time.
Right,
no,
right.
I'm wrong. It could be, no, it's midday, I think. Sorry, I forget the time difference. It's 4 p.m. New York, so 1 p.m. Sorry, 1 p.m.
Right,
Los Angeles.
Right.
So, yeah, for him it was afternoon, for me it was morning, and so I'd get on for a few hours and you know, basically Ed had this great program where I could listen based on CD quality.
I know, exactly. We use it. Yeah,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Audio Movers probably.
Yes, exactly. It was Audio Movers,
yep,
exactly.
Yep, we use that all the time. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, so Ed had two screens, and he could have these, you know, and I was sharing screens so I could see the mixing, you know, all the controls and so forth on the graphic that was on his screen. And it was really, really amazing, you know. Obviously, it'd be better to be in the room with him, but...
oh, yeah.
But, you know... But
it's pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
You really can...
And with the amount of, you know, these days, I mean, it's not like the old days where you do a mix and you could never recreate it because it's actually a performance in itself. Nowadays,
right.
It's all automated, you know, everything, you can recall it perfectly and say, I want exactly that except 1/4 dB less in that moment in the song if you want, you know. It's that, you can be that finicky about things and... infinitely change things, of course, which is a problem in itself.
So this is a record for the times, and you have things to say, and you know, I mean, come on, World of Pain, and
well, we've always
and,
done that, though. We've always talked
I know,
about
but
things.
This is my point, and carry on. You know, I mean, you've always either been that sort of thing or love songs, you know.
Well,
right?
The love songs...
And unrequited love songs, by the way.
Yes, you have noticed. yeah, well, yeah, there's always... And some of those love songs have been actually not necessarily about actual romances. They've been about other situations, which you could translate into as a metaphor, saying it's about a love romance.
Right.
Like, for example, I Want You Back. That's a classic example. That isn't actually a breakup song about a real romance. It's actually about... I wrote it because one of the guys left the band and was bitching about us behind our backs. So,
wow.
So I kind of, you know, and I'll say one of these days he's going to regret it and wish he, you know, he came back and I want you back. He'll say that, you know. So I just kind of wrote that as a love song just to kind of like express the emotion of that moment and to make it in a way that's comprehensible to someone else. But it was kind of triggered by this situation, which was, you know, kind of a bit crappy at the time, you know.
But I mean, when you sit down... go, okay, we're making another one. After all these years, is there something you say to each other that kind of lifts it off, so to speak?
No, it doesn't, actually. What happened was we literally just went in the studio and tried to work on a song together, which was Answered Prayers. And that was the test case for working with Nick and to see if we were going to like the way we sounded with this new drummer. Because, you know, it's one thing to play songs that he's heard on a record and we've played a million times live, but to come up with something new together was a whole other challenge. And we weren't certain whether we were going to gel in that way. You know, it's never happened before. So that was the real discovery process. And the rest of the album is like the same thing. You go into the rehearsal studio with I have an idea for a song and or Brad might... And, you know, we try it out and does it sound good? Does it work? And, you know, it's just that chemistry. Is it happening or not? And that's our main thing. We don't sort of plan ahead and go, we're going to have an album that's going to have this many quiet songs, this many loud songs or whatever. You know, we don't – it's the last thing we think of. We just merely make the sounds that excite us and the songs that you know, make us as, you know, music fans ourselves feel like we want to hear them more and be, you know, and those songs thrill us. As far as what I'm writing about, I do think that the album is kind of dark.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
But I mean, I think it's kind of defiant. Like World of Pain, a lot of people have been put off by that because it's about, you know, basically going out and getting messed up, drunk, and getting into some all sorts of trouble, you know, and
that never happens.
No, see, and that's a blow by blow. I mean, you know, it's not one night of my life, but it's certainly many nights of my life rolled up into one. And, you know, it's, I kind of think it's funny, you know, I don't think it, I mean, it's ugly, but it's funny to me. Cause you know, we do these things, we're human, we mess up. So I'm not, you know, saying I'm any better than anyone else. And I'm sort of showing off how stupid I am at times by getting myself in these predicaments. And, you know, there's other songs that, you know, for example, I mean, Carry On is kind of dark, I suppose, in the sense that it's talking about struggling against other people's expectations or their interference in your life, and sometimes, you know, they make it harder than it needs to be. But again, it's defiant, you know, and the Save My Soul is another one, you know, Don't Try to Save My Soul. That's a very defiant song. It's talking about, you know, hard won you know, experience, and also, you know, a realization that you shouldn't judge yourself by the way other people see you.
This band has a tradition. In fact, it was less than 2 weeks ago that I played A Hard Day's Night on the radio.
Yeah.
You have a tradition of taking covers and making them your own. And here you did another Beatles and Dylan,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they're bonus tracks on the vinyl version only. They're not on the CD or the digital album. So they will be mostly unheard by a lot of people unless you're a real rabid collector. But, yeah, they just came out of the blue. We just decided to... Someone asked us to do a song for a Dylan tribute album, actually, is what happened. I don't know if it's still happening, but we just recorded it while we were in the studio. Let's just do it.
Oh, interesting.
You know?
And you're like, okay, you know what? We'll put it as a bonus.
Yeah, we just thought...
Bonus on the vinyl.
But it's also a question, you know, when you do any cover, as you say, like, what can we bring to the table? It's not just a case of let's play that and sound like that, you know,
You know that cover bands have such a... I mean, every band starts, most bands.
Oh, yeah.
Start as a cover band. But the ones that remain, their reputation, you know, someone will invite me like, oh, you want to go see a whatever cover? And I'm like,
yeah.
No, actually, please take this the right way. But no, I'm old now. I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
They're not going to do anything like that myself.
I mean, I even worry about some of my favorite artists becoming like cover bands sometimes because they get so soulless where they get the sort of generic musicians backing them. You know, I don't want to name names, but, you know, it does happen.
We don't have to name names. We already know who they are.
But
okay.
But we do like to think we can put our own stamp on it. So we've got an example of the Dylan, you know, it was impossible. You had to find a song that could be done by the Hoodoo Gurus, not just a great Dylan song, because that, you know, right. Why bother doing that? You just make a bad version of a good song. So we had to find one that we thought we could put a spin on. And the same with I Want to Be Your Man, the Beatles song. We've actually wanted to do that for a very long time. It's a cover that's been actually, you know, probably about 10, 15, 20 years we talked about doing that song, because we just think that song is so caveman-like. There's something really basic and primitive about it. And we just thought that's something like we've had a lot of that in our
Well, because it launches in with that guitar riff and boom, it's there.
Yeah, well, that, you know, made that riff, you know, I wrote that riff that goes with it. That's kind of like a new spin on it. Gives it a slightly like Blue Cheer kind of vibe to me. And, you know, perfect for a fuzz guitar as well. So we kind of just, you know, found our own way to kind of amp it up in a Guru's way and at the same time honouring the song itself and not trying to make it, you know, something ridiculous that, you know, it should never be.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two Hoodoo Guru songs on the outside.
Right.
And then you get to pick two songs from the new album as the theoretical bread. And then you're going to give me a pile of songs by other people. Anything. There are no rules. There are no genres in between. And then the last 30 to 40 minutes of the show is solid music.